Siren Radio.
Yes, it's always the uncertainty that makes life just that teeny, teeny bit more interesting, I find. Nevertheless, it's still a wonderful opportunity to, without any further ado, simply actually cue the ident and say...
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
Now, it's not as though, Anna, we would be encouraging the notion of zombies as taking over some kind of zombie apocalypse in Lincoln, London, Teesside, wherever you happen to be tuned in to the Midweek Drive. But the video of a freshly removed human brain does actually open up a whole range of different aspects. And one has to ask the question, Anna, why did you feel that you had to sort of ease away from that whole notion to demonstrate the human brain, a fairly soft organ, which effectively can, I believe, feel no pain whatsoever? It's all in the mind.
Well, it's something that you kind of hear a lot about, brain injury and people who have lobotomies and all that sort of thing. And I watched Gunther von Hagen, the man who did the...
Indeed, the autopsy.
He did the plasticization, yes. And although I'm not a scientist in any manner, shape or form, I have a fascination for how things work. So Gunther von Hagen taught me about that bit of the anatomy, but the brain video, the little clip, was absolutely illuminating. I mean, to see inside a human brain is quite something, and have a sort of guided tour of it as well, in all its graphic details about the colour and the consistency and the texture. Now, that's something that you don't learn every day, so I thought I'd post it because I think other people need to know too.
Corpus callosum, medulla oblongata, pons, just a whole range of wonderful bridges there between the dinosaur brain, the critical brain, the brain itself. But obviously we would endorse the fact that from a public health and safety routine, if you do feel that you wish to consume brains, then check whether or not indeed you're a zombie or not, because it's not a good sign. I just have to say that. Whatever the species happens to be. And I appreciate there are certain cultures who actually delight in having the brains of primates as a possible delicacy. No. Anyway, that's a different line entirely. Who knows where that could actually be heading. But let's actually move to another little line entirely, which, apart from congratulating our graduates who've had the ceremony today, and they're doing wonderful, well done, they won't be listening to this show. It'll go on. I mean, it's for head for the hills and celebrate in all manner of ways. We also say happy birthday to Ben Lewis, who hasn't graduated this year because he'll be graduating next year. It's perfectly understandable. But it's Ben's birthday, so happy, of course, next week, two Lewises. Anna Lewis in London, Ben Lewis in Lincoln. Amazing. But I will ask the question, have you ever encountered, as a wonderful historian and connoisseur of matter, of matters historical, the gentleman who actually coined the phrase landscape gardener? He would, of course, be referred to as the great improver, Humphrey Repton. That's Humphrey Repton.
No, but I'm very interested. Carry on.
The special North of England Horticultural Society exhibition, which is part of the Autumn Harrogate Flower Show, which we'll be talking about in a few moments, marking the 200th anniversary of Repton's death, and it traces the life and works of the 18th century's last great landscape designer, the son of a wealthy tax collector, born in Bury St Edmunds, and after starting out in the textile industry, Repton tried his hand as a journalist, dramatist, artist, political agent, and private secretary.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, he decided to combine his skill as an artist with his love of botany and gardening. And I mean, I was familiar with Capability Brown, as I'm sure you were yourself, Anna, and he was keen to fill the gap left by the demise of the renowned Capability Brown, so Repton began to send out circulars to his upper-class acquaintances advertising his services as an improver of the landscape.
Oh, wow. Nice title.
Yep. First commission came in 1788 at Calton Park near Norwich, and an overnight success largely attributed to not only his talent for design, but also to the red book that he produced for each client to help them visualise his plans. And these red books contained text and watercolours using overlays to illustrate before and after views of the landscape. Now, unlike Capability Brown, who'd been famous for sweeping naturalistic landscapes with no formality, Humphrey Repton began to reintroduce formal terraces, balustrades, trellis work and floral gardens around the house in a way that became common practice in the 19th century. People that might have appreciated Humphrey Repton, he designed the grounds at Blaise Castle near Bristol and at Woburn Abbey, as well as introducing a Chinese garden, American garden and arboretum. If you want to check out his place in London, only Russell Square in Bloomsbury survives today.
Oh,
there we are. Well, there you are. So that's Humphrey Repton. Sadly, badly injured in a carriage accident in 1811 and died in 1818 at the age of 65. Never that to be said, we haven't actually launched with a little bit more depth and analysis about Humphrey Repton and the whole perspective of life and the universe. And one day you'll join us either in Harrogate or in other places for either the Autumn Flower Show or the Spring Flower Show. But let's move on, because how is Richmond, not Virginia, not northeast England, but Richmond on Thames today?
Yes, Richmond's very grey. It's very sort of overcast and it's... Everyone looks autumnal. Everyone's jacketed up, and yes, it's not as it was a couple of weeks ago with t-shirts and shorts. No,
as you yourself said, Anna, a mere 7 days ago, winter has definitely arrived. Or perhaps it's just autumn. Let's not scoop our way from that whole system. And I know you've been checking out once again the final resting place of Nellie, who was the saviour of what is left of Orleans House in Twickenham as well.
Yes, well, she's amazing. I went on a guided tour. There was a very able young man called Ben, who, funnily enough, is a teacher who's taken on guiding work at Orleans House, and a girl who's training up, who's called Ella. And they're really into Orleans House, which has become a showpiece since the £3.2 million refurb in the last year or so. And it's wonderful, Richmond has gone to town really to celebrate the survival of Orleans House gallery, because the company that owned it, which I think were a sort of a quarrying company, they were going to demolish the whole lot. I can't pronounce her name anyway.
Could it be Nellie Samuel Ioannidis?
Ioannidis,
yes.
That's it. She twice married, originally a Solomon, so she was of a Jewish family. She married Mr. Levi, and when he died, she married Mr. Ioannidis, who was a Greek shipping magnate with bucket loads of money. They had one son called Adam, who sadly died in childhood, so she had no other heirs. So she literally gave her collection to Richmond upon Thames. And some of her items are in Orleans House Gallery as we speak. So she was a great benefactor to the area, and a nice lady by the sound of it. Lovely woman.
As you said, clearly.
And she had poodles that were named after types of champagne. So if you see a photo of her online, she's sitting next to this white poodle that looks like he's got horn-rimmed glasses. Well, that poodle's name was Clico. But apparently she had several dogs, all poodles, named after types of champagne.
Well,
so there you go.
As in Veuve Clicquot, of course. And the daughter of our first Viscount Bierstadt, who was the founder of the Shell Transport and Trading Company, a precursor to Royal Dutch Shell. Marvellous. So, I mean, one of these days we're going to have to do that location report where we do a fascinating wander through London with yourself, Richard Fitzwilliams, and a whole heap of other things. A little tease ahead to tomorrow morning. Claire Warrior, Senior Exhibitions Curator at the National Maritime Museum, London, will be celebrating the 250th anniversary of HMS Bark Endeavour. Yes, James Cook, 250 years ago, it launched, and the world has never looked back since in many ways. So Claire will be telling us about some of the things that she's been getting up to at the National Maritime Museum, a place I don't think you've checked out as yet, have you, Anna? So we
might see. I had a long time, about four years ago, but right. Not recently.
Well,
no, that should be on the list now.
Have a word with the Senior Exhibitions Officer, Claire Warrior. Isn't that a life surname? Claire Warrior for HMS Bark Endeavour. Clearly, it's like naming your poodles after champagne and a heap of other goodies. It's great stuff. And so another classic Anna Lewis insert and indeed feature begins to come to an end as we approach 12 minutes past 5 o'clock here on Siren Radio. Up next, William Coles from Edinburgh. But in case people are wondering, but he hasn't actually played the tune that he regularly plays to celebrate graduates the world over. It's not. The tradition is actually there. Baz Luhrmann is lined up with those final words of advice for graduates, wherever they happen to be, from whichever institution, although obviously the University of Lincoln clearly has good quality graduates. Would you like to answer those last two questions, Anna? First of all, have you had a reasonable, interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Certainly have. Thank you, Alex.
Marvellous. And I take it you'll be back again with us next week when, as we said, hopefully two Lewises, one in the studio, one online. Ben, no relation, I don't think, but you never know. Ben Lewis from Brighton, Anna Lewis from the Eggs. Exactly. You'll be back with us then.
Yes, I certainly will. Thank you very much for the invite.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 99, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much, or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance. So are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance. Even if you have nowhere to do it but in your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Travel. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise, politicians will philander, you too will get old. And when you do, You fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you'll have a wealthy spouse. But you never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me, on the sunscreen.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
One of the joys of social media is sometimes you can be prompted into responses such as, did you realise it was his birthday a few days ago? Last week, of course, the Madrid driveouts in full force devastated when I revealed that it was indeed Bill Cole's birthday and they missed it. So I shouted out, belated birthday greetings, in capital letters with lots of exclamation marks, to which Bill replied, thank you. Yay. Bill, once again, belated birthday greetings. Next year, we guarantee for 2019, we'll do a special birthday show just for yourself. It's just, you know, what can I say? You know, clearly, I should have been paying more attention. There it was, happened, whizzed by, and you probably went through the whole piece thinking, the swines, all of those weekly slots I've done for them, and they still couldn't remember by day of birth.
What are you talking about, Alex? When you're over 50, we don't do birthdays anymore.
Is that so? I thought, you know, it's a celebration of the anniversary at which you arrived on the planet, which surely has got to be worth celebrating.
All right, OK, fine, yes. Yeah, I'm grateful.
Yeah, well, I mean, as Heather Lowry said, you're looking good for 106, so it's great stuff. You know, that's the important thing from that perspective. So the 160th anniversary of Bill Coles, which actually means you're only a matter of 7 years younger than the oldest person in the British Isles at present. So good news there. Anyway, enough of it. We carry on down the line. And what did you think about the emotional departure of Alistair Cook as a cricketing aficionado? That, plus, of course, James Anderson. I mean, is it just a case of we're getting goosebumps watching these guys? We'll never see their like again. We're privileged to be there. Is that the kind of response we're getting, or is it just a case of, meh, whatever?
Oh, we quite liked it. We're not. I mean, don't we prefer 2020? My kids certainly do.
You see, this is something else. This is something else we have to lay at the door of an Australian, in this case, Kerry Packer. And I think, what about that joy of test cricket and the five-day, never-ending series, which, if nothing else, confuses the heck out of our American cousins? I mean, what can you say? It's just that sort of thing. Never mind. Maybe I'm just vacillating about the whole thing, but it's just a whole new theme of that. And the other question which remains to be asked, so I'm going to ask it without further ado, primarily because, as you may have gathered, the Madrid driveouts too busy celebrating the graduation. It's understandable. I mean,
I heard it was today.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing out partying in their own way. I did my sort of meet and greet with the parents that were there, those that wished to speak to me. Those that didn't, that's fair enough. Moving on, the question, of course, being, will there be any possibility of a sequel to Dave Cameron's School Days, focusing on the man who is literally going to be a serial philanderer, adulterer in so many ways? I mean, surely he's doing all the pre-publicity for you, isn't he, Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I think all we'll have to do is bring out Dave Cameron's School Days, yes, and we'll just change the title
to
Boris Johnson's School Days.
Genius. You see, that's how you call the built-in sequel working for itself, you see. So it always works there. Who knows where that will actually lead us. I'm sure Theresa May is ruminating on it even as we speak, but never mind. Any thoughts in Scotland? Because, I mean, obviously Alex Salmond is not flavour of the month there these days in terms of shenanigans or alleged shenanigans and so on and so forth. Is it just a case of, as long as Miss Sturgeon is with us, then all's well with the world?
I am not a fan of the SNP, and I hope they tear themselves into bits over Alex Salmond. I don't think they're a great addition to the UK.
Bill, as I've said before, you don't have to beat around the bush. You can actually say what you think. You know, up to a large point, it's important to kind of get these things out and share the whole pain and challenge of the whole sort of system. But,
you know, fortunately, you don't have any SNP listeners, so I'm safe.
Hey, listen, you know, on the podcast system, it's a global operation. Who knows what could happen? And maybe they're actually sort of, they've got a secret enclave of SNP voters in the Lincoln area who are literally just using this as a rationale to say, yes, we will rise up and conquer the castle and the cathedral and claim it for Bonnie Scotland and, of course, France and other connections who historically have actually connected with us. There we are. I won't do the countdown to, I think there is less than 200 days now before we actually sort out what's going to happen with colleagues and various other bits and pieces. However, next week we will be speaking to a composer who's now living in France as a direct result of the actual vote. So we'll be sharing some thoughts with that sort of aspect. What have you been getting up to, Bill? Because it's the opportunity. I mean, normally this is the time when we sort of throw it open to the team to actually say, so, name to be supplied. Have you got any questions you'd like to put to Bill Coles at this particular moment in time? To which we usually get a response such as, what's been your biggest influence or something? But no, you know, now we can freeform, we can work off-piste, so to speak, with the script. And it's a case of, what have you been getting up to this week, Bill Coles?
I have been looking after my two cousins who came up to Scotland to play some golf. And they were using me as an advanced B&B, and my wife had gone to London. So it was just me, my two sons, and these cousins. And one of them is the world's number one flautist, or so he claims. Mm-hmm. He's the principal flautist with the Philharmonia. And basically, he's just waited on hand and foot. And so he says to me, we'd like to hire a car. Could you sort it out?
Right.
As if I'm PA. Sort of
flunky. Yeah, it's Bill Coles. Yes, you know, you can switch your responses. I'm sorry, do I look like your personal assistant? In which case, could you please award me with a salary that's consummate with the kind of skills and services you're requiring?
Well, I missed a very large trick, because what he did was he tossed his credit card and his driving license onto the kitchen table and sort it out. And so I got my younger son to start tinkering away on the net to book a car for him. And what we should have done was ordered a sort of open-top Porsche at 900 quid a day, and that would have taught him a lesson.
Exactly. Or alternatively, given his occupation as the world's number one flautist, simply said, go whistle. Sorry, I did that.
Yes, I could have done that.
But then, of course, there are family relations and all kind of other bits and pieces. Suffice it to say, Bill, that unless there's a significant change in the routine, we shan't be inviting the flautist onto the mid-rate drive unless you'd actually, because you know, he's lost it. Effectively, in the words of Phil Nairns, our California correspondent, he's more or less dead to us without even connecting. So, you know, what can we say? Moral of the story is, do not mess with the mid-rate drive correspondents. Otherwise, it could actually sort of result in challenges for further invites onto the programme.
Well, I did. You might like him on. He can play a mean tune on his solid gold.
Okay. Well, I mean, next week we have the executive director of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, so maybe it'll work out. I don't know. Mind you, he's a regular, and as far as I know, Scott Harrison has never actually thrown his credit card down and demanded that anybody sort anything out for anything himself. That's why he's executive director of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra. But there we are. Anyway, well, that sounds fun. So, I mean, if nothing else, good material for another novella, I feel.
Yes, we love other novellas, don't we? One of my books, which came out 10 years ago, Love Story Set at Eton, rubbish title. They're bringing it out again, finally, 10 years later, with the correct title. And so from being called The Well-Tempered Clavier, it's going to be called The Piano Mistress. Because nobody has a clue what the well-tempered clavier is.
Do you know, I've waited years to actually address that system, and I thought, was it just a case of, you know, Bill in collaboration with his publishers, etc., thinking, let's make it as obscure a title as possible so people actually purchase this on the basis of wanting to know what exactly it means? No, bad decision. Keep it simple sometimes is the most productive way forward. So,
yes, exactly. No, the Well-Tempered Clavier was a rubbish title. I mean, no one knew it was a piece of music. Yeah. And some friends of my parents, they were saying, who is Clavier? Is that a girl's name? Oh, God. Anyway, so we've you've got the correct title,
well,
finally.
That's perfectly okay. Flowers and the Essence of Healing, Forget Love, I'd Rather Fall in Chocolate, and The Rose Temptress, just some of the plants of pleasure, which is the theme of this year's Autumn Flower Show. If you fancy coming down to see us in Harrogate this weekend, you're more than welcome to do so. Probably not, but then again, that's a little bit different line there. We'll be speaking to show director Nick Smith in a matter of moments. But inevitably, the more cogent and coherent listener amongst your good self, including probably Penny Evans, who, yes, Penny, will play any music you wish, up to a point, as long as it's legal and all sorts of other bits and pieces, just get in touch with us. Apologies for delay in speaking to you last week. She put on lots of things about Facebook, which I hadn't realised were there. Quite perceptive comments as well, which is great. Anyway, the bottom line is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, William Coles?
Yes, I have. Thank you so much for asking, Alec.
And will you be back next week when we also, as I've been trailing ahead so excitedly, have the return of Ben Lewis? Yes, the man from Bentley Motors and Brighton should be back in the studio again with us. Will you be with us as well on Freshers Week, actually? Because that's the other thing that's happening next week at the University of Lincoln. A whole new batch of undergraduate, keen undergraduate souls are coming in to actually learn all manner of things at the University of Lincoln, of course, the home of Siren Radio.
I'd love to come, Bob.
Yay! Oh, and happy birthday, belatedly, Bill Coles.
Thank you.
Temptation took a hold of you. You gazed and gazed into the mirror, hanging from the bathroom wall, and there decided just exactly where it was you were going to. Given the opportunity, you'd strip me bare. Given the opportunity, you take me. I have nothing more to add. I have nothing left to say. So just go away. I'm throwing it all away. Do you remember the last time? Old temptation took you out for a spin. You arrived in, but nearly died in. Oh, the hurt and anguish you put your loved ones through. Given the opportunity, you'd strip me bare. Given the opportunity, you'd take me.
And if you were given the opportunity, or indeed are given the opportunity of attending the Autumn Flower Show at the Harrogate Great Yorkshire Showground, then take it. Take it by all means. You'll find out more about the wonderful great improver Humphrey Repton, who we spoke about in the earliest part of the production. You'll find out about plants of pleasure, and even more excitedly, you may well actually have the opportunity to meet in person, and who knows, maybe even take a selfie with the awesome show director. That's Nick Smith. Yay!
Hello, Alex.
It's something I feel, Nick, we need to have a word with Camilla and actually develop the marketing, in which case you could actually offer selfies with your good self as a way to kind of enhance the whole experience. I mean, we've got your Facebook, you've got your Twitter, you've got the Instagram. Selfies with Nick, I feel, is the next thing that's just waiting to happen.
Oh, I certainly hope there are better things at the show than selfies with me. I think if we haven't, we're doing something wrong.
Once again, just when people were thinking they can't top last year's thrill-a-minute experience of Deadly Nightshade and various other factors and so on, you've only gone and topped it with, as we said, the great improver Humphrey Repton, 200 years since he passed away, but also the fascinating Plants of Pleasure. Would you like to share with us this journey across thousands of years of guilty plant enjoyment, from cocoa beans and grapevines to love potions and perfumed oils? Origins of plant. I mean, it's a cornucopia of great horticultural delights.
Well, I think it is. I think it's that point that, you know, things that we see as treats and enjoyable these days, we don't realise that a lot of them are from plants. You know, we're thinking of coffee, we're thinking of tea, we're thinking of chocolate, as you say, wine, beer, and, you know, also things like, you know, we've gone a little bit left field on it, even things like ancient love potions and things like that. It's all sort of things of pleasure, things that are enjoyable. That we don't realise it from plant-based, and that's what we're exploring.
Yes, I was quite taken with the quote, "Forget love, I'd rather fall in chocolate."
Well, it's true, as opposed to some people.
Well, exactly. Clearly, with the growth of type 2 diabetes, we'd probably say just avoid that now, but step away from that whole process. But, you know, it's a deal. We've got the wine and the vine. We've got, and of course, the story of tea, starting actually in 2737 BC. Back in the joys of China, when an emperor is said to have sampled the results of a concoction created after leaves from a Camilla sinensis tree accidentally fell into a pot of boiling water. Actually, that's a Camellia sinensis tree, as opposed to a Camilla Harrison tree, because that would be another joyous thing to it. Just I'd roll it out there from that point of view. Again, that's there in case people are wondering, but what about those awesome giant vegetables? You haven't forgotten the giant vegetables. The Battle of the Giants is happening as well. 16 monster classes. Unbelievable.
It's true. We're really, really happy with the amount of entries that have so far put down on the list that they're going to stage, because we thought the summer, you know, it's been a difficult summer for a lot of growers, both in plants and in fruit and veg. But the entry levels seem to be fantastic. So as long as those people all stage, we will have a fantastic, fantastic show, and we're really looking forward to it.
Of course, 4 years ago, 2014, Tony Glover set that new goal and produced the wonderful 18-pound 11 ounces, or 8.47 kilos, of, was it a giant onion? I presume it was a giant onion.
It was indeed. Yes. 1811, it was the national championship.
The Heavy Onion Championship, or HOC, as we like to say, sponsored by Kitchen Garden, which is there. I mean, that's one of the things. I was chatting about the whole event with a colleague earlier today, and people say, I didn't realise you were interested in horticulture, etc. You don't really have to be interested. It helps if you are, but actually there's so many lifestyle things that are actually happening there that it's just an awesome treat in itself to kind of work through that whole process, from vegetables onwards, really.
It is. I mean, from our point of view, we like to think it as a spectacle. You know, so yes, if you enjoy horticulture, then we have everything you would ever need. But we also like to think that even those who aren't into horticulture, it's not their primary focus. They just come for the absolute spectacle. If you think of those 5,000 blooms in specialist societies, just in rows and rows and rows, which just take your breath away when you're going to see them. I am also things like, you know, the plant pavilion, where the scents, the sound, the everything, the smells, the look of it. It is just incredible. It's something that I think everyone should experience, whether they're plants people or not.
Yeah, indeed. Living on the Borderline, another great series of inspirational zones, this time for the Autumn Borderline competition, with the Ashley Landscape Studio in Bath being just one of, again, I think it's a wonderful subtext, this. It could almost be, I'd almost like to use this as a title of my autobiography, Nick, A Tale of Autumn Grass and Squirrels, just because I like it.
If that reflects your life, Alex, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was having an eye. I thought, should I just call it Minsey were the Borogroves? And I thought, no, I'll call it A Tale of Autumn Grass and Squirrels, because, you know, it should work on that basis. Season of Mists is there. You've got the Teku Garden Boulder, and, of course, Grubs Up, from the extraordinarily entitled Wax Wicked Plants in Scampston. Amazing.
The wax one, it will be amazing. So that is carnivorous plants, which are going to be come and sit down for dinner. It's going to be a fascinating looking space.
And who's for dinner? You are, of course. You're on the menu. As those little plants scream out in their own way, things get a little gothic with his garden border as we prepare to take a walk on the dark side of the plant world. Presumably, they were diamond exhibitions last year with the deadly nightshade, etc. And said, it's all right, you can come back as long as you don't eat too many of the visitors.
It was something like that.
It's a way forward. Returning back to Humphrey Repton, this is somebody, again, we were talking about the early part of the programme with one of our historical correspondents, Anna Lewis, in London, and she wasn't aware. I mean, obviously, Capability Brown, yes, but Humphrey Repton really produced a whole range of activities, and the fact that he actually turned to this work after trying his hand as a journalist, a dramatist, an artist, a political agent, a private secretary, his red books. I mean, this is somebody that I think you rightly decided to celebrate, and is somebody I think we've probably forgotten about as history has kind of passed us by.
Well, I think that's right. I think, you know, for those of you, like yourself, who visit us regularly, you'll know that a couple of years ago we celebrated Capability Brown in an exhibition to him. But the idea of Repton was that Repton moved on from Brown's ideas. And what's not known as well is the amount of work that Repton did in the north of England. And that's really what we're trying to promote. We are the North of England Horticultural Society. Yeah. So we're promoting that work that he did in the north. So there are a number of houses and estates that he covered in this part of the world. And we really want to just explore those with our visitors and just let them know the sort of work that he did. And it was a much more decorative style than Brown's. You know, Brown's was those large open landscapes. Repton's was far more decorative and probably something more we relate to today in our own landscapes, because they're more sort of individual gardens rather than the Repton precursor.
For a change, Nick, it's just the two of us having a chat, because being graduation day, a number of our midweek drive-outs have literally just graduated. So they're doing other things, but they do send their best, and quite rightly so, as well as obviously celebrating the joy of the Autumn Flower Show. Personally, I think it would be the ideal routine. After graduation, what's the best thing forward? Come to the Autumn Flower Show, see the events that are actually there. But if they choose to do that, and why wouldn't they, can people still purchase tickets on the door? Because I suspect it might be a wee bit too late to get tickets online. Or are we just literally at that borderline thing?
Tickets have just closed online, Tickets out there are plenty of tickets available on the door every day. So please do come along and enjoy that. And of course, for those people who are still students are half price.
Whoa. Flowershow.org.uk is indeed the go-to website, which I've already been sharing around through the social media with a whole variety of folk, including colleagues today, who again, those lines, well, I'm not all that interested in horticulture, but my wife might be. I said, you will be after this. You see, that's sort of right. No commission whatsoever. It's great. In addition to that, of course, let's not forget the fabulous food that's actually on offer. We've got Yorkshire Fair with Callum Baumer. We've got Julie Robinson. We've got Josh Whitehead back with us again. All sorts of things to actually deal with good, nutritious, healthy eating.
They're absolutely, and you know, we're very lucky to be able to attract so many sort of well-known chefs and cooks from around the region and around the north of England, and they do create things that are pertinent to the landscape, pertinent to what they do, and it's lovely really for just to allow the public to be able to see that, because you know, we don't see that every day, we don't all get to dine in these restaurants, these pubs and so on, so it's nice to see it happening in front of our eyes.
I'm particularly interested in Richard Johns, who's focusing on the Sunday at least with dishes featuring apple, beetroot and tomato, primarily because I often felt that for many years beetroot was the spawn of the devil, and maybe that goes back to the notion of beetroot and spam being probably one of my least liked school dinners ever. It was just, you know, spam and beetroot. I just felt it was child cruelty, you know, in all sorts of ways. So there we are. So I'm sure that Richard will be able to actually produce something which might even kind of shift my perspective. Maybe it's nudge theory, but still, what the hey. I do particularly like Luke Hutchinson's line, from bees to bottle, talk and tasting on that particular aspect. I suspect I know which bottle he's actually talking about, and it's all about mead and various other things. So it's great stuff there. What are you most looking forward to yourself, Nick? Or is it just a case of I'm already planning for the Spring Flower Show on the 25th to the 28th of April 2019?
Well, we're always planning ahead.
I know. It's...
No, we are. But it's lovely to be able to, you know, what's really lovely, actually, Alex, is to see so many visitors that we see year after year, to welcome those, to welcome so many new visitors, and also to welcome the exhibitors, because, you know, we wouldn't be anything without the exhibitors, and they put on such a fantastic quality show that we're very proud to be able to host it.
And we're proud to have you in the north of England, which is the important side of the whole thing. Actually, we've got to mention, apropos of nothing at all, other than, well, I thought that's quite interesting, Harrogate Town are doing quite well these days as well in the old game of association football in the National League. Top
they
of the table.
Hey. They are indeed. They're racing through, aren't they?
Exactly. You know, this is a message which could, you know, clearly leads to all sorts of possible sporty themes in the months and years to come. But that's, I mean, who'd have thought it? Harrogate Town. Still, never mind. It's a dotted line from that. We mentioned the website. Mentioned various other bits and pieces. Nick, it's been awesome as ever. Touch wood, fingers crossed over the hills. I hope to be joining you either on the Friday or the Saturday to connect with you for another fabulous routine. Passing on best wishes, of course, of Midweek Drive, so up and down the country. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
As always, of course.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
You certainly can.
And keeping the madness themes going, what do you think about Mr. Apples? Would that be a suitable number to sort of move into another little feature?
I think we'd be happy to go with that.
A devout and well-respected man, woe betide you if you wander from God's plan. Square-shouldered, straight as a die, the righteous truth, he never tell you no lies. But when the old sun go down, he's heading off up the wrong side of town. Eyes sparkle in the red light glow, trouser pockets, he's ready to go. Rotary Club, never unsure of which shoulders he should rub. Scout leader, a pillar of the church, capital punishment, he wants to bring back the budge. Of course he does, cause when that old sun go down, heading off on the wrong side of town, eyes sparkle in the red light glow, trouser pockets, he's ready to go.
Music be the food of love, play on. But was he concerned about goosebumps? Well, it would seem that certain music in live entertainment can actually provide those goosebump feelings. Talk about this fascinating research conducted by Barclay Card in collaboration with Matthew Sachs at Harvard University and indeed the University of Oxford's very own Robin Murphy. We have indeed Professor Robin Murphy. First of all, good morning to you, Robin.
Good morning. morning, Alex.
And we also have the wonderful Barclaycard solo extraordinaire. That would be Dan Matheson. How are you, Dan?
Good morning, Alex. I'm well, thank you.
Wonderful. Robin, if we can come to you first. I think most human beings have had this situation where they've listened to something and it's often tied into other memories, other times past. I mean, music is a great tool for stimulating nostalgia and various other things. And then that moment strikes and, yeah, it's a goosebump moment. Was that something which kind of inspired you to lead to this study? Or was it just a case of, no, I fancy doing something quite fascinating?
Well, but that's exactly it. It seems like a very simple response, that sort of goosebump effect that most people have had. But we really don't understand the factors that relate to and actually cause them. So it was very exciting to be given the opportunity to do this sort of groundbreaking research in a live festival, along with Matthew Sachs from the University of Southern California, who studies musical goosebumps, and with Barclaycard, who are passionate about live entertainment. And what we're able to do then is study concert goers as they're listening to live music and try to investigate the specific role that live music plays in eliciting these emotionally charged feelings that we get.
Now, little did I realize when I was passing by Leeds Festival, indeed Reading, over the August bank holiday, that you would had 100 participants wired up to test their physiological responses with heart rates, movements to songs, etc., as well as psychometric tests, attitudinal questionnaires. Were we trying to science the heck out of the joy of music here?
Well, no, it's exactly the opposite, is that by understanding things, we can get a better appreciation, a deeper appreciation of how valuable they are to us. Because I think most people do understand the goosebump that comes when you have a cold chill against your back, a silent, whispery voice in your ear, or something negative that's happening. But goosebumps have this musical effect. The music has this goosebump effect as well, which is this aesthetic quality where something very powerful, because of memories, because of who you are, produces this enjoyable experience. So it's fundamental to who we are, and it strikes me that as a psychologist that we want to understand these, because understanding who we are is really what we're here to do.
So by
taking these 100 concert goers, and as you say, hooking them up with a heart rate monitor was the physiological response, and using these questionnaire results to understand who we were recording from, we could get a really interesting sort of dynamic, a profile of how these responses were being elicited live while the music was going on. And so the most exciting result for me was this fact that, you know, we were seeing 55% of the people during this 45-minute set, relatively short period of time, were experiencing goosebumps. That amounts to sort of 2.8 goosebumps per minute were being elicited in this live environment, and people were really excited by that.
In terms of aspects such as emotional intelligence, well-being, general overall health, is this something else in which music therapy, which obviously has got a tried and tested history, can also impact, so we can actually start looking at almost prescribing the right kind of music for the right individual to actually help their particular EQ?
That's very interesting, because it's true that one of the results that came from this study is that the people that experienced goosebumps tended to be emotionally open, tended to have those more positive emotional responses on the day. It doesn't mean that only those people had those responses, but that was the tendency. And I think there is an understanding that to the extent that you're emotionally open, you're probably going to experience your emotions more, and probably also that you're going to reveal your emotions. So obviously we were recording, as psychologists, we're asking people to report about their emotions. So that requires people to be emotionally open. And what you're saying is that in the music therapy, what we can try to do is link up a person's emotional experience and use music to expand the range of emotions that people have. I mean, I think that most people will have music responses like the ones we're talking about today. But you're quite right that not everybody receives them all the time in all situations. And that's part about understanding our own responses to music. It sort of goes back to your original point, is we want to know who we are. We want to be more open. And I personally would rather experience more musical chills to more types of music if I could. And so understanding that is an important part of understanding the psychology behind musical bumps.
Dan, if we can turn to your good self as head of sponsorship at Barclaycard. I mean, for me, the nightmare scenario would be that the science is so well understood, Simon Cowell gets hold of it and immediately sort of programs us to actually listen to all sorts of things that he listens to. But presumably that's not the intention of this particular work.
No, not at all, not at all. I mean, with Barclaycard Entertainment, that the big focus on it is around, you know, looking at everyone's music taste, all these different types of genres, for example, and making sure that we're offering these opportunities to go and have these experiences with you know, many, many, many different types of music and artists. So, no, we're certainly not trying to get it prescripted in any way and have it anyone's interest spoilt or taken over by any individuals. That's certainly not the plan. It's very much around everyone's own music taste and making sure that we can, you know, in what we're offering through the program, that we can make sure that everyone can experience exactly what they want.
Excellent. Good to hear. Now, returning back to the study as well, Robin, I was fascinated to find that women are more likely to experience goosebumps during live entertainment than men. Is that kind of the reason why back in the day people would have Beatlemania, David Castimania, all sorts of other men, Take That and so on? Is it because actually at one level that's what's causing that kind of reaction, that emotional reaction?
We did find a difference, you're quite right, between women and men and their experience of goosebumps at the event that we recorded. It's important to remember that that was a particular event on a particular 45-minute set, and so it's not surprising that that set was appealed to a particular group, and because you're going to find that if you go to different music events, you find a different group of people will be maximally responsive. So I wouldn't want people to imagine that women over men have these responses or that emotionally open people have them solely, but it's simply about, and this goes back to your question with Barclaycard, which is that what people need to do is find what makes them feel those responses. It's about understanding how you are not just reflexively responding to music that's being projected at you, but ultimately you have control over what you listen to. And so it makes it a much more personal experience when you understand what is giving you those goosebump responses. So yes, in our sample, women receive more than men, but that's probably much more down to the particular study and the particular musical event that they were listening to.
And is it crucial that we're talking about live music here? I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the vast range of live music, which is clearly an important part of human culture, ranging from the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, the Master Chorale, right the way through to, say, the Reading and Leeds pop festivals. Is it something which you can replicate or look to replicate with respect to the recorded music?
Well, I think the live music aspect is particularly important. That was what excited me about doing this, because what we're saying is that the goosebumps aren't produced simply by the sounds, which you could reproduce in an environment with headphones, but they're being caused as well by the interaction with the performer. They're caused by the interaction with the friends and loved ones that you're hanging around with while you're waiting to listen to the music, and as you're experiencing the music. We found people were talking about the social interactions that they were having as they were jumping up and down. So that was an important part of what really intensified the experience. One other answer to your question really is it just that live music is louder and more intense than music that you might listen to at home? And I don't think so. I think it has a much deeper, much more multi-leveled aspect to it because of the social interactions, because of the interaction with the performer, as well as perhaps the music is louder and that's contributing. But it's a multi-causal effect produced in this dynamic live environment.
Dan, where can people go to find out further information about some of this fascinating material we've been talking about today?
Well, if they go to barclaycard.co.uk and they look at Barclaycard Entertainment, they'll see all the different events that are coming down the road, and we'll soon be announcing all the festival pre-sales ready for 2019. So it's certainly a good time to do that.
And needless to say, I have to ask both you gentlemen, have you got a particular brand of music or form or genre of music or artist that generates goosebumps with yourself? Robin, if we can come to you first.
Well, I like to think that I have a relatively wide range of musical tastes, and all types of music can probably produce those effects. I like certain types of rock music, but also opera can produce the same sort of chill, of that spine-chilling effect that you get when you have something really emotionally powerful.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
Well, for me, again, I have quite a wide range of music taste, but I do find a lot of film soundtracks, Gladiator, that sort of thing, can really trigger it. But, again, it's linking things back to life events. So my son was born and I remember listening to Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol. So that certainly is one of those songs for me.
An awesome choice, if I say so, Dan. An awesome choice. Professor Robin Murphy, experimental psychologist extraordinaire at the University of Oxford and head of sponsorship of Barclay Card. That would be the wonderful Dan Matheson. Many thanks indeed, gentlemen.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Alex.
If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're told before we get too old. Show me a just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world?
The Addams Family, Wonder Woman, The Green Hornet, Bonanza, Murder, She Wrote, The Mod Squad, Honey West, Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
Quite right, too. In fact, I'm always tempted to say the sequel to Annette André's autobiography will be Where Has Arthur Been All Our Lives? Arthur Weingarten, welcome.
Thank you.
All great stuff there.
By the way, I have been instructed by Annette to say that your copy is on the way to you.
Oh, well, this is splendid stuff, because I say the pre-orders are actually there. More marvelous stuff there from Quoit Media. That's Quoit Media. You can go on online to the website, quoitmedia.co.uk, and an awesome book, which already should be basically in everybody's Christmas stocking. If you're looking for an early must-give Christmas gift, etc., to any aficionados of top-quality television, then clearly Annette André, Where Have I Been All My Life, is clearly there. It's like existential psychoanalysis, but written from the layperson's perspective and with genius quotes from Roger Moore and a whole heap of other great things in there. So it's marvellous.
Nobody's paid you a cent to say that, have they?
Actually, no, Arthur. No, it's because we like to have that support for the Midweek Drivet family to continue
that's
across
wonderful,
the globe. That's the important thing. And I also have to say that Tessa Snott and her mum, and as you're well aware, your book is still actually kept nicely on her bedside cabinet. I saw her this afternoon. She was graduating in her own marvellous way. So I said, okay, she wants to send her very best to
us. That's wonderful. But I'm going to be in touch with Ripley's, believe it or not, for longevity.
Yeah, well, I mean, the strategy now is I've put in another order, obviously, for Where Have I Been All My Life, so that she can have a companion piece there. She can actually have clearly your own book, Arthur, the World Trade Center, and then Annette's Where Have I Been All My Life, and she's got one for either side of the bed. So it's great. I mean, it's symmetry.
That's wonderful. It's a 5-foot library.
Yeah, and actually, whilst we're on this, I think we should also look to at least get Where Have I Been All My Life as a companion piece to all the Gideon Bibles as well. So just a thought there. So that's another sort of
thing. There you are.
It's a way of promoting the whole system, and quite rightly so too. But a few seconds ago, Arthur, we were speaking to Professor Robin Murphy from the University of Oxford, experimental psychologist, who had just been in collaboration with Harvard University and the University of Southern California, all about what creates goosebump moments in live entertainment. Yeah. So as somebody who, as a writer, has created their fair share of goosebump moments for series which we already heard across the globe, what is it that's given you a goosebump moment, either in a live music sense, a live entertainment sense? Is it the Laurel and Hardy videos? Is it a case of the first time you actually wrote the Honey West script? Where's it come from, basically? What sort of things? Or is it a case of, no, I'm a hard-bitten writer, I don't have any goosebump moments whatsoever?
No, I am the most willing victim to goosebump moments. First of all, I think it's a brilliant idea to analyze. I think it's terrific because it speaks of something that is on the autonomic system. We have no control over it. And it's only in retrospect that we look back and say, why did I get goosebumps? Because literally your skin feels like it's filled with the cascading bumps, and it is. For me, I am, one, unaware when it will happen, and very happily so. But number two, the thing I have discovered in myself, and at first I was mortally embarrassed, is that it's the sentimental that gets me. I'll give you an example. When I first saw the film Moulin Rouge, and interestingly enough, Annette writes about this in her book, she felt the same way. There is an end scene in which José Ferrer, playing Toulouse-Lautrec, is on his deathbed, and in a reverie he is visited by all of the characters that he drew and painted in the Moulin Rouge dance hall, and all come to say goodbye. Well, I was sitting in the audience watching this, and I just was literally covered with goosebumps. And I remember thinking to myself, you should be mortified. How can you allow this to happen? And it really, truly put me off for quite a while until I analyzed what it was. And that is, one, a casting of the truth in a very unpalatable way, so it would seem, and then reversing itself in, only that should happen to me. I should be that lucky.
I've got to say again, from my own sort of point of view, there are a couple of movie moments where this taps into. I mean, one I would say, perhaps for obvious reasons, is Robert Donat's incarnation of Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and the final sequence there,
which actually echoes
that line where all his past students march in front of him and they do the rest of it. A bit like Graduation Day, really.
Exactly, so same thing.
That line of things.
Yeah.
And the other one from a movie which I think has often been underrated. It starred the late, great James Stewart, and it's then called Shenandoah, a mid-60s movie, where Jimmy Stewart is effectively the head of the patriarchal head of a family. You don't want to get involved with the American Civil War, but through a variety of unfortunate instances, the youngest son, of course, eventually being carted off by the Unionists and the Confederates, etc. And they go off on a search. It stars Doug McClure and a variety of other fine folk as well in the series. And there's a moment at the end where they go to church, and obviously James Stewart has been praying to, or basically saying his final farewells to his late wife Martha, and they come back. And there's a moment where he enters the church. That's a goosebump moment for me, which worked really well. And again, I often think that Shenandoah, underrated. Equally, another Jimmy Stewart movie, Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. It's replete with them.
Oh, yes.
Certainly at the end.
Oh, yes. Yeah, without a doubt. That, as a matter of fact, is anatomically one big goosebump.
Absolutely. It's as though Capra specifically worked on that premise to develop it. And yet, we've just been sharing that. But this data actually suggests that women are actually more likely to experience goosebumps during live entertainment than men. So, interesting.
Really?
Yeah, that's which I think maybe we're just in touch with our inner femininity, Arthur. That's the key thing. You know,
I would hope so, at least. I would hope so, considering that I think women are far more interesting and in terms of a quality existence than we are.
And many an African leader has said exactly the same thing about Theresa May, especially when she was dancing for them. But never mind. Best not progress
That should be put in every museum of the moving image.
I think so. And, it can lead to, a possibility of maybe a Strictly Come Dancing with Theresa May, Vladimir Putin, and Donald Trump.
She does have a second career waiting in the wings.
Exactly. There's a countdown.
Can you imagine being that inept both in real life and in illusion?
Well, as you know, Arthur, I've been endeavouring to develop the dream ticket for years now of yourself and Annette Andre to actually become joint governors of both Britain and the United States of America. But, it's way forward. It's a definite line there. I mean, it can only be a vote for common sense and confidence and idealism from that point of view, which is wonderful.
You're right. The decline and fall in one 24-hour period.
Annette, of course, is over in Britain at this moment of time. I'm sure you can actually attend some of the grand events she's taking part in and sorting out other bits and pieces, book signings and so on and so forth. From your own perspective, there's also a countdown now. We're actually less than 198 days before Brexit actually kicks in. Now, do you care in the States, or is it just a case of, well, we're just marking off the days until Britain finally sort of steps away from the European Union because that's what the insane folk voted for? Sorry, almost political point there.
I hate to say this because, as you know, my affection resides in England. I loved all the years that I lived there. To me, it is one of the saddest things that a lout sold the bill of goods to a woman who should be nowhere near Parliament, and this is the result. We are having our own moment here with another lout, of course, but I would like to say that Brexit is on the mind of the American people. The mind of the American people is still in search of. We seem to be interested only in the individual, wherever that may be, Muncie, Indiana, or Trump Tower. What's good or bad for me is what is operative. Brexit gets in the New York Times columns and in the rest of the media, zero. and I find it just so emblematic of the problems with this country from way back to this day, in that we honestly believe we are the eye of the storm, to use a current thing of this devastation that's about to hit the West East Coast here. But it is true. We are a narcissistic nation. I hate to say this. I'm not a patriot. I'm not a flag waver. I'm a one-worlder, so I have no problem saying that. But it is disheartening, the lack of attention we pay to the rest of the world. It's only in England, it really is, if the royal family has a hiccup, you get some press.
And, of course, Meghan Markle has helped as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and not to take away, because those two people are really the hope, along with
absolutely.
His brother and wife, the hope of the future. And they happen to be, I mean, talk about a turnaround. That fellow Harry has, you know, I think he's terrific.
It just goes to show, those shenanigans in Las Vegas, just yesterday's news, you see, complete revamping.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and also, too, how honest he was in saying how in deep in mourning he was for his mother, and how that turned a personality into something that was not really who he was. So, you know, we live and learn.
To use that well-worn cliche, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's what we're like. And of course, on the good news front, things to look forward to. 2026, you have a World Cup taking part in Mexico, America, and Canada. So surely that'll break down borders and barriers. Maybe not.
Yes, that should help.
Exactly. It's a whole new world. Arthur, a reminder, of course, to the listener that Where Have I Been All My Life, a memoir by Annette Andre, is out and about in all sorts of ways there. It is an awesome book, as we said, so we'll be talking about that as the thing proceeds. 272 wonderful pages with 16 pages of colour and black and white photographs, hardback with a dust jacket, just superb. Go to quitemedia.co.uk to sort out details for that. Arthur Weingarten, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
I have had a wonderful time, as always, and I thank you on the Annette's behalf and mine for those wonderful plugs.
And this is even before I've actually got into the book itself. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be fantastic stuff. As I said to Annette, it's hopefully the audio version is working through as well from that point of view. Arthur, can we book you for the first Wednesday in October? Would you be up for that, do you think?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm saying that because I know you're not an internet person,
send
so
out.
We might as well work our way through that, because clearly you're doing double duty
send
now.
Out. Right, send out the jungle drums and I'm there.
Marvellous. That's what we like to hear, Arthur Weingarten, as ever. We salute you. Take care now.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm still looking.
The new Theatre Royal Lincoln proudly presents Royal Radio in partnership with Siren Radio. Each month, the NTR team, Alex from Siren Radio and Lauren, the theatre's newest reviewer, fresh from her PR degree, will be on air with stars performing at the theatre. Listen to music from the shows, interviews with the stars and the team who work tirelessly, providing Lincoln's oldest and most treasured entertainment venue, with over 150 shows a year, on 107.3 FM, or through podcasts via the NTR website.
I know, in so many ways, he's become the foundations, the columns on which the Midweek Drive actually founds itself, and indeed the wonderful Royal Radio, which airs for the first time on Siren Radio tomorrow evening, just after 7 PM. Isn't that exciting, Philip Hurdwood?
It certainly is. And by word, that sounds very good. I'd like to be there.
Well, it's an awesome...
Or B Square.
Oh, now there's a wonderful Hey Dude moment back from the 1970s. It's almost like Graham Harper quoting from 77 Sunset Strip and people thinking, what is he talking about? But there we are. That's the line.
Well, it happened.
That.
There were people who were alive then.
I know. We can remember it more than just an aspect of history. It's like shoulder...
Indeed, it seems like the mere blink of an eye when it's all in the past.
Shoulder pads and parachute pants and shell suits in the 1980s.
Just... I remember you wearing them well and you looked a picture.
I always felt that doing a radio show without a set of parachute pants was actually something which was just not done, really. It was just, no, it's not
it wasn't a day worth having, was it, really? I mean, it was, you've got to wear that outfit, otherwise you won't feel like some of, smashy and nicey kind of DJ type.
It starts with the shoes, as many an actor has actually said. It
with the
shoes.
It does. It's the key start thing with from the shoes. There. It's very true. That I think that was young Judith Dench remarked on that one, was it? I believe.
Still with us, as opposed to Fenella Fielding, who sadly has passed into the
I'm sorry to have read that, but my goodness me, what a long and active and pretty wonderful life in many ways. She had her ups and downs, I understand, in her life. But
I think my favourite quote, Philip, from the oeuvre of Fenella Fielding was when people used to say they were going to casting sessions with casting directors, and as we're well aware, one of the gradual topics that we can pretty much guarantee will crop up whenever we get a group of actors together is the unimaginativeness of casting directors.
Easy for you to say.
Exactly, you'd say that. I fed you with the line.
You,
I put in the deliberate
you,
stumble
you.
There. Move on from that.
Said.
Genius.
You're the feed and I'm the, I supply the boring old joke.
Well, it's a classic system. And given that she always used to respond with the notion of ruddy cheek, why don't they call me directly?
Yes, absolutely. Audition, how dare they?
Exactly. I mean, it's rather like I recall a quote from your good self back in the 1990s when when asked to actually produce an Irish accent, you said, which one? Which accent? Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. I've even heard that. Now, oddly enough, as you say, no looks you see. Oh, dear, I shouldn't say. No, it was... I should do that. I should do... What's his face? Ronnie Corbett, shouldn't I? No, you see, no look. No, it was when he was coming back when he was on the chair doing the monologue. It was Miriam Margolyes. I was actually in a recording session with Miriam Margolyes, the legend that is Miriam Margolyes, her of the million voices. And she came in flustered and late for her session, which was not her fault, because the previous job across town had kept her late. And so she rushed as fast as she could. Anyway, she was a little bit late, and the producer had already laid out exactly what he was wanting. And it was for a big, I forgot what the job was, but it was for a big Belfast radio station, which has got one of the biggest demographics, one of the biggest, broadcasting areas in the UK, I believe, or if not Europe. Anyway, they said, so anyway, Miriam, I've gone over it with the other guys, and we want a Belfast accent. And she said, yes, which one? Now that is precise.
Mm, exactly.
Because you can do it, you can have a Northern Irish accent, and there are lots and lots of different Northern Irish accents. And indeed,
it's not for nothing that Miriam was the voice of the smooth rabbit in a commercial for a chocolate product a good few years ago.
She was indeed. She was indeed. But, I mean, she does have a remarkable range, and she's got one of those extraordinary, musical ears that she can actually not only pick up on, but she can also reproduce so many different voices and accents. I mean, she is quite literally one of the best there is, I reckon.
Very important, vitally so, and much appreciated. Whilst we're in the process of actually saying get well soon to Rosemary Smith, who's been a bit poorly, but she's having all sorts of challenges these days. But Rosemary Smith, I'm not sure whether you ever met Rosemary, another fine actor who was once actually Benny's girlfriend in a series called Crossroads. Sort of send best wishes there.
Wow, so, gosh. On which I had a cousin, a late cousin of mine, used to be the floor manager on that show.
Wow.
So I used to be able to get all the gossip and all the rumours and all the innuendo, classic
lines of saying, it's not wobbly sets, it's just a case of having an earthquake in the central television area, that's all.
Well, that's actually probably not far from the mark.
Yeah.
But no, it was a show which I think a lot of people had fun with, a lot of fun mocking, and I suppose some people got involved with the characters and so on. And of course, Julie Walters and Victoria Wood made fun of it, didn't they? With their
Acorn Antiques,
which is kind of along that line of people sort of waiting for their cue and crossing each other and sets falling down. It was just kind of a little bit too close to the mark, wasn't it, really, in many ways.
A few moments ago, we were sharing the airwaves with Arthur Weingarten, ace producer in the United States, and we were talking about goosebump moments. Now, personally, there are many people who say every time I listen to the Stone Stumps, that's another new series which we're working on, you get goosebumps in all sorts of ways. That's my opportunity to actually cue in not just Sam Stone, of whom the show is named after, nothing to do with Nigel Neal in a TV episode a few years ago, also David J. Howe. They're in the studio, Philip. Isn't that exciting?
It is very, very, very exciting.
Hello, Philip.
Very exciting.
Oh, hello there.
Very good. I know, it's amazing.
I thought, you see, it was just going to be a tete-a-tete with Alexius here,
Well, the offers are always there when graduation comes round and the midweek drivettes fly away to sort out all manner of bits and pieces. How else can we entertain the listener?
Donning their mortarboards and gowns.
Precisely so. And having worked our way through the Harrogate Autumn Flower Show into Goosebumps, the question for you, Phil Hurdwood, is,
yes,
is there any kind of live entertainment or music that ever kind of gives you goosebumps and sort of says, ooh, it's a goosebump moment?
Goosebump moment. You mean a particular show or film? Or
moment or piece of music or anything that's...
I'll tell you the moment, and it made my heart leap into my throat, was a moment in that fabulous stage play, War Horse, which I saw very, very early on in the National Theatre, and I don't think it hadn't transferred by that time to a main stage in London, but in the centre of London, in the West End. It was actually at the National, and it's all done with, I'm sure the audience is perfectly aware, it's all done mechanised horses, with people operating these extraordinary puppets, and there was a moment, well, I won't spoil it for anybody, you might go and see the play, but there is a particular moment of such transcendent theatricality. I know that sounds a bit corny, but
Philip, if you want to talk about transcendent theatricality, feel free to do so. It's your part of the program.
Well, I will then. It was transcendent, and indeed it was theatrical. But there was a particular moment where you were willing a particular thing to happen, and it happened. And you looked at it, and you were absolutely spellbound. And the audience collectively held their breath, and when this particular moment was over, there was a kind of a cathartic kind of a gasp throughout the theatre. It was an extraordinary moment, and I swear that there were an awful lot of people sitting there with hair that was on the backs of their necks, which was standing to attention. It was an extraordinary moment, and one I'll never forget. It was an amazing time.
And, of course, being so fantastically professional on message, Phil, once again, you've identified the fact that the author of War Horse, Michael Moore Pergo, is going to be in Lincoln as part of the Lincoln Revolutions Book Festival between the 22nd and 29th of September.
Well, How about that? I must have intuitively known he was close to us.
That is the benefit of the intense rehearsal periods that we actually have for the Midweek Drive. I mean, Sam Stone, we're testing. You know,
well, it was weeks and weeks and weeks, folks, to bring this show to you, folks.
Exactly.
It was weeks of preparation, weeks of... We have a team of researchers, don't we, Alec? We have a team of researchers who assiduously burn the midnight oil to come up with facts, figures,
statistics,
fraudulent nonsense, all manner of wonderful things to educate and entertain.
The only challenge, of course, is that Michael Morpurgo will be at the Lincoln Drill Hall, I believe, on the 26th of September, and that's a Wednesday at 6:15. Michael, you're going head-to-head with Midweek Drive. I'm sorry.
Well, I would be there, only I'm going to Romania the following day. So.
Well, next week, Philip, we're joined by Tracy Borman, author of Gunpowder, Treason and Plot, who thankfully is actually performing at the Book Festival on the Saturday. So you see, she obviously sense, she knows the sort of Midweek Drive sort of scenarios there.
Yes, fascinating.
David J. Howe.
Hello.
Goosebump moment for yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting talking about goosebumps and stuff. One of the things that we're talking about in the Stone Tapes today is urban legends and urban myths and that sort of thing. And I always feel that these things that, you know, could possibly just be true, you know, like that urban myth that there's actually radio DJs working at Siren FM and they're not just AI bots.
Unbelievable.
Right. We talk about this. Unbelievable.
That's definitely an urban myth, isn't it?
But no, and I'm reminded of all sorts of stories. I mean, I think my favourite one, I don't know if it's a particularly well-known one, is it's the one about the husband and the wife, and the wife... sees the husband out in the garden, and he's pottering around in the garden and doing what he's doing. And then she looks at it again, he's vanished. And she's like, oh, where's he gone? And he doesn't come back, and he doesn't come in, and she has no idea where he's gone. And she goes out in the garden, and she can't find him, and no one's heard of him, and he's just literally gone. And the next day she goes out and sees on the lawn there's kind of like a patch of grass, which is sort of like starting to die off. A circle of grass that's kind of dying off. And she never, ever, ever sees from her husband again, hears from him again. And then about a year later, this patch of grass in the garden has still remained dead. It's basically a completely dead patch now. And she steps in it. And when she steps in it, she hears him screaming, no, 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 no.
Oh, then, God.
And then that's it.
I got goosebumps.
You see, the sort of thing that really kind of goes, oh, deary me. I cannot remember where I heard that story.
Yeah, and I haven't heard that one.
Because it's an urban myth.
Because it's an urban myth.
It's an urban legend.
It's an urban legend.
It is wonderful.
Was
I love it.
Taken by fairies? Was it a time slip? What was it? Where did he go? Mm. You know, it's absolutely fascinating.
Well.
That's the sort of thing that raises little hackles, which is why films like Candyman and, well, indeed, Urban Legends, from that, and all of that kind of thing seem to do so well, because people are fascinated by those. Could it just be true?
I'll tell you one thing, I can guarantee would actually raise goosebumps when it actually happens, and I say when. It's a movie that Phil Hurdwood and Graham Harper are currently working on. That's going to raise all sorts of
ratings.
Yeah,
good.
Well, yes, there is magic and mystique in that.
And Romania, well, what's not to love?
And the magic. Well, no, we're not talking vampires, but it's certainly got, otherwise known, actually, let's be kind of truthful here, the in real terms, the actual... vampires were came from the old Strigoi legend.
That's right.
Tell me about. How do you know about those?
Well, we're both horror writers and horror film fanatics.
Ah,
you see the way we've worked on this show, Philip. It's amazing.
Fantastic. And what's the film called, Philip?
It's called the working title is called The Old Land.
Lovely.
It's all up on IMDb so far. We have a complete team, and we're sort of we've got everything kind of in place. We're just waiting for some more investors to come on board, and then we hopefully will start shooting next summer.
Smashing. Yeah. No, the Strigoi. Yes, that's the old name for vampires, isn't it? That's the
They took different shapes. They weren't sort of immaculately dressed gentlemen in capes and evening suits with sharp teeth. they were sort of, that was Lon Chaney, I believe, who started that one off. No, it was really they're more they could take lots of different shapes and forms. They can live in behind rocks, under rocks, in rivers and streams, and so on. Mm. And I suppose they're kind of, if you like, in a way, sort of every farming person's, every agriculturalist's worst dreams, any disease that you know might afflict your cattle, any crops that fail, any people in your family or village who get sick, you've got somebody to blame, haven't you?
And but this is almost your kind of lycanthropic idea as well, and there is, I think, a strand of thought which says that this is in a way where all of this kind of legend came from in the first place. Was,
yes.
You know, poor people, not literally turn into wolves, but, you know, would get rabies or some kind of, you know, disease.
Yeah, and they're shapeshifters in some way.
Yeah, which made them kind of go mad and violent in their hair all over the place and go on rampage and stuff like this. And
it's the same with demon obsession.
Yeah, they would just assume that these people were turning into something. And this is kind of where the legends all came from, way, way back in the day.
I think there's a great deal of truth in that, certainly. Mm. I mean, our film doesn't touch on that kind of thing, but it does touch on ancient folk tales.
I love that.
And one particular one in one particular. I mean, the whole thing is as well, really, I think part of what we're seeking is really in the film to not only, you know, show Romania in an extremely positive light, and it is it's a very beautiful country. It's got an incredibly rich culture, rich history, rich traditions, and an awful lot of that is kind of overlooked with the cliché view that Romania is kind of, you know, is potholes, gypsies, corruption, you know, and all the rest of it. But,
and tributes to Ceausescu, of course.
The whole story. Sorry?
And tributes to Ceausescu.
Well, that's not the whole story. But also, we wanted to talk about how that so many of the folk tales across, and you'll know this, guys, I mean, so many of the folk tales across across Europe actually have striking similarities.
Yes.
For example, the St. George and the Dragon, motif is common to a huge amount of European cultures and stories. And, and that's part of what we're exploring in the film.
And you get things like Chupacabra as well, and this kind of myth.
It's going to be a programme which comes of age when it gets its full airing a week tomorrow. But we're prepping
and tangentially, if you like, I mean, tangentially, he said, selling his film hard. But tangentially, what we're doing is kind of, if you like, showing, you know, that there are things in Europe that unite us rather than separate us.
And it's Graham Harper, directing, I assume.
Sorry?
Graham directing.
We sincerely hope so.
Yes, indeed. He's on board. I met up with him. We had dinner about 10 days ago.
Let's just ease back from that because it's time we actually had Lara, our other sort of co-producer, on from that perspective. But I need to just head into this particular aspect now because Penny Evans has written in to say, ooh, this is my subject, horror writers and movies. Yay, Penny!
Oh, wow.
Penny. Hello, Penny.
Penny, you need to be listening to the Stone Tapes, Penny.
Well, she has.
I think she does, actually.
Is she our listener?
She's more than that. She's our official Derbyshire correspondent and singer and does various other bits and pieces. So there you go. Okay, moving on.
Maybe Alex, maybe we should have a horror night, a horror show, as it were.
Well, curious enough, that is the Stone Tapes. But let's move on.
Well, actually,
or this current program,
Philip, I'll just hijack you for a future guest for our show. I think when the film's made, we'll definitely review it and we'll have you on to talk about it.
Sam. Let's bear in mind that without Philip, this wouldn't have actually manifested in the world.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
Number of times, Philip, that line about geek. I mean, I think it's fair to say that you got goosebumps when you heard that first time, Sam.
It did indeed. Yeah. I did indeed. I thought it was amazing.
I like to feel, you know, that's part of the Herdwood Lefchuk scenario that we built and worked on in the 1980s, having something to say in the 21st century. There we are. Let's just see if David J. Howe can remember the last two questions to put to you before we head over to Tiffany Freeman in Leicestershire.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think the first one might be, what's your favourite breakfast cereal?
Nice.
Alex knows where this is going. He's shaking his head at me now. Philip, have you had...
A large and a woodbine.
Lovely. Philip, have you had a relatively interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have had an exceptionally good one and I really, really enjoyed it thoroughly.
And will you come back to tell us all about your film and the development of it at a later date?
Absolutely, only if Alex invites me, and he's been promising me that he's going to have me up in the studio one of these fine days, but has he? Has he? No, he hasn't.
It'll happen, Monsieur Herdwood. It will happen.
I know.
Exactly.
I know.
You have to put all the fine china away.
And the silverware.
and all the light will be, and all the future prophecy, and all the waves the sea, and on the road.
Off she goes in her own inimitable way. Exactly. David muttering in the background with his microphone not switched on. It's okay. It's fine. Because we can say Tiffany Freeman is back with us. Now, Tiffany, important times now, because not only can I introduce you to two fine souls who've joined the whole setup since actually after you graduated, because I think it's more than 40 months since you graduated. Isn't that right, Tiffany Freeman?
Yes, it's been a while now.
Yep, yep. And clearly negotiating our midweek drivettes who graduate into the wide world brings us together with the likes of Gabriella Peralta, who regular listeners will be aware always provides us with the weather forecast for Lincoln from her particular location in Gibraltar. And Tiffany obviously would be pleased to actually hear these dulcet tones on a morning, should she choose to listen in, or indeed on the podcast.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And she sends her best to you, Tiffany. So you just wanted
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Gabriella...
Guess who's on my course, of course.
This is, of course, the acid test. Is Gabriella... Gabriella remembers Tiffany. Does Tiffany remember Gabriella?
You know? Of course I do, yeah.
Exactly. But allowing for that, of course, clearly the next aspect that comes through is to ensure that given that Tiffany has joined us again from Leicester, And she spent many a year, actually, with it. She was here for the last 24-hour broadcast-a-thon, did a whole range of things. So I think, finally, she deserves her very own ident. What do you say, Sam?
I think that's a very good idea.
Well, what we came up with, actually, after much analysis and various other bits and pieces, was this one.
Tiffany Freeman, the cultural correspondent Leicester and the Midweek Drive has needed since Richard III arrived in town.
See what we did there? A little bit of history.
Like there's a bit of history there,
bit,
yeah.
Bit of history.
I do like that. Yeah.
I like it.
Bit of lines from that sort of perspective. So, you know, we feel that hopefully that'll set the scene whilst we also find the question mark or find the answer to the question. What have you been getting up to in Leicester recently, Tiffany Freeman?
Recently, I have been, well, mainly focusing on work. And I just had a relaxing weekend in Leicester. My boyfriend did the 10K, the Leicester 10K, which was quite nice to watch.
Excellent. Did you motivate him at all? Did you give him a nice wristbands to monitor his heart systems and all sorts of other bits and pieces?
Oh, yeah, he had all that gear on. But, I'm more of a cyclist rather than a runner.
Mm. I'm assuming it's 10K of distance rather than, like, 10,000 pints of beer or something.
Oh, please.
That you have to down in the space of a day.
Although Tiffany did build up quite a reputation during her time at the University of Lincoln, I don't think that's a different line entirely.
Right. Is that where the phrase, has the bar Tiffany'd yet, comes from?
Nice, yeah.
To say that the base of this beer's all run out.
That's a very good one, because I was going to actually talk about Tiffany Case, of course, the Jill St. John character in Diamonds Are Forever, who, curiously, her parents didn't name her after. I think it was more a case of, I think we're alone now, Tiffany, the former 1980s pop singer.
Well, if you're going to choose a role model, choose a popular one. Yeah,
exactly. Now, Tiffany might have said, OK, Philip Hurdwood was one particular aspect, but what about the fact that, you know, we're supposed to be gender equal here? So, you know, just for your own delectation even, I'll get the things sorted through. Here's another one for you.
Tiffany Freeman, the cultural correspondent Leicester and the Midweek Drive has needed since Richard III arrived in town.
See what it did there. And in case
I really like these.
Yeah. It's very good.
So you should. I mean, that was a former Legs & Co dancer who did it for you. So, you know, that's the important thing, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
that's good.
These are the messages that we sort of like to put together. So never let it be said, Tiffany, all right, it's taken a few years, but we got there in the end, yeah?
I mean, what I'd really like to know, Tiffany, is have you visited the car park?
The car park. Well, I've walked by it many times.
And have you felt a frisson?
A Richard III frisson,
Richard III
perhaps.
Frisson.
You know, the notion that, you know, I'm not dead yet!
The buried king was
urban myth.
The car park.
Let me out. The ticket's too expensive.
Yeah. No, I've not actually been in the visitor centre itself.
Oh.
I went to the cathedral when the internment.
That's right, because they buried him properly, didn't they?
Yeah.
With sort of pomp and circumstance and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there was a fascinating story, though, wasn't it? And people were like, well, why is he buried in a car park? Well, the car park wasn't there when he buried him.
you may say that, David.
Unless it was a very old
but,
one.
You know, apart from that Shakespearean propagandist, who, of course, ironically, was called Shakespeare, that Richard III was a nasty, horrid person, etc. Had he, of course, ascended to the throne and not actually had problems at Bosworth Field, he could have actually kept us in Europe. We would have been all connected. We'd be in a whole new area. Different dimension.
Ye oldie parking, i.e., would have been there, you know, clamping his chariot and giving him tickets.
These are the messages even Kieran Rose will be very impressed with. By the way, did you just go and see Kieran Rose, or was it just a case of I said, I'm going to promote Kieran Rose now?
Oh, have you seen the video?
I'm always happy to promote stuff that you send to me, Tiffany. It's what I call keeping that tutorial balance together in a pastoral sense.
Excellent. Yes, he is looking for a new job. He's a very creative person, very intelligent. And yeah, he's looking for a new senior marketing role somewhere, anywhere in the East Midlands.
Marvellous. Well, there we are. Yeah. A free advert on the East Midlands fabulous siren radio.
That's amazing.
Maybe the car park's visitor
centre. I'll still be happy about that.
You can obviously take a percentage profit on that and go for that in whichever way you so choose. That's the important thing.
So what's happening in Leicester then? Has it been a nice day? Have you had a relaxing day?
Today's been okay. Yesterday, Leicester King Power Stadium hosted the football match England versus Switzerland.
One glorious goal to nil.
Yeah, so that was quite exciting for Leicester.
And three Leicester players on the England side for the first time since the 1970s. I bet even Sam Stone would struggle to remember the joys of Keith Weller, Frank Worthington and Alan Birchenough.
Who?
There you are. Yeah. And that's why the Stone Tapes doesn't do football.
Keith Weller related to Paul Weller?
Tragically,
what was
no.
that thing you named? Is that a sport?
Sports? What's that? Yes.
Remember, I'm a geek.
So it's fair to say, Tiffany, they probably weren't watching the game. Were you there? Were you actually at the King Power Stadium? Or was it a case of, no, I needed to just step away from that point of view?
I was in the gym instead. I didn't watch that game, though. Yeah. Unfortunately not. Sorry.
But the lads won 1-0 in the friendly, which technically isn't a friendly, but they still actually won 1-0. So well done to Gareth Southgate.
So we were talking about urban legends as well, Tiffany. Are there any urban legends around Leicester that you know of?
Okay, that's a good question.
Thank you.
It hasn't changed.
Should I have given you notice of that one?
I just had a flashback there to one of the seminar sessions of 2014 where, you know, Tiffany, when I'd bowl out a question such as, have you had any consideration about the role of the development of the BBC and the British Broadcasting Corporation? You know, her response would be very measured and she'd look very serious and say, oh, that's a good question.
Have you got a good answer, Tiffany?
It was awesome. It was from that moment.
Save it for the Stone Tapes, David.
Well, there is actually this one. Yeah, the Elephant Man was from Leicester. If that's anything.
Oh yes, of course.
Like that. Kirby Muck. I think Kirby Muck's label.
I didn't know he came from Leicester. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's something.
Oh. And not even a legend, an urban fact.
Line
that was actually there. He wasn't sort of wandering around looking for Richard III, saying, Richard, you think you got it bad with your slight back? Check this one out.
Yes.
You know, it's like one-upmanship across the whole sort of system there.
Yeah.
Oh, dearie me, that's fantastic.
Life continues its own merry way. Let's just tease ahead, actually, Sam, to what this month's Stone Tapes, which, as I say, will get its airing for the listener a week tomorrow, which would be the 20th of September in the month of our Lord, 2018. Of course, in the awesomeness that is Siren Radio, and of course, shortly available afterwards on podcast. We've talked about urban legends. What other things would be there which might encourage Tiffany to tune in?
Well, we are going to be talking about some new films that we've seen. There'll be lots of reviews. We're talking about The Lodgers, which we've seen recently on a streaming service.
We've got What Happened This Month.
In this month, which is some important dates from many years ago.
And we've got some cracking music. I think we've got a couple
little
of tracks.
A little bit of Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
Timbaland and Nelly Furtado, Morning After Dark, one of my favourites.
That track, it's going to be good. It's going to be a lot of fun. And who knows what might happen. And we've even got the legend that is Joshua Lou Friedman.
All the way from Los
Angeles.
Dialing
in from Los Angeles to tell us all about what's been happening in LA.
And not an urban legend. Now, Tiffany might also be sort of saying, but where's Phil Learness? I mean, I'd expected to connect together with Phil Learness once again. Well, he was so disappointed that you weren't around a couple of weeks ago to connect with us, Tiffany, or indeed last week. He decided, no, I'm going to do it at midnight, so Phil Learness will be with us tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
I know.
So, yeah, it's just the way it is. You know, I mean, appreciate that he's decided to opt for finding out what the weather is going to be like for Lincoln from Gibraltar with Gabriella. But, you know, we're working on that, you know, so... You know, we've already got these jingles up. We've got those idents sorted through. It's going to be splendid.
Speaking of Philip Learness, and I know you were vaguely mentioning him, did you ever see The Ladykillers? Did you ever get to see it?
Yes.
We never got to see it.
Well, we haven't seen it yet.
Well, I think technically it's still on the kind of release aspect and various other things. I saw the original rough cut. I saw the next stage forward. It's an interesting movie which is of its time, but sometimes, as those of us in the business of show are well aware, folks... When a movie is actually made, I'm sure Josh Louis Freeman will be able to confirm this, the release dates in different territories, and Tiffany, I'm using the technical phrase there, territories, can vary. So we don't quite know what's going to go on that sort of regular basis. So I've got to ask the question, because we can, on the Stone Tapes and on the Midweek Drive, but we'll put it until Midweek Drive. Doctor Who on Sunday, worried, bothered, is it a case of, I don't care, we'll be watching it on iPlayer in any case, you can put it on any sort of way forward.
That's
what's
right.
The view, David J. Howe, as a Doctor Who scholar?
I don't really mind at all. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, they seem to be changing quite a lot with this series. I have no insight or knowledge.
Really?
Yes.
Surely the Doctor's always going to be his wonderful self, is he not?
She's going to be wonderful. I think she's going to be amazing. And she's going to knock it out of the park, I think. But they're changing so many different things, different elements of it. They've changed the companion makeup. They've changed the music, everything. So I think, you know, transmitting it on a Sunday, perhaps it's another little kick up the posterior that perhaps
well
the schedules
well
need.
Well, they're going to make sure that it's got a set time, aren't they, this time?
Yeah.
Usually it's getting pushed back by
Strictly
or something. It's
about half an hour and all over the place.
Yeah.
And if you put it on a Sunday evening, then I think you get far more that classic slot. You get that audience that kind of wants a good entertaining show to watch before they have to go back to work on Monday. I mean, and to be honest with you, I mean, we're probably going to be recording it and watch it at some point.
Because
we're busy. I think I don't have any problem with it at all. I mean, as long as they make it and show it, does it really matter?
Well, I'd just like to say that I'm actually very interested in what it's going to be like. And to me, it doesn't matter whether the Doctor is male or female, as long as it's good writing, it's a good story, and there's a good plot.
Yes.
And good performances should go along with that.
Exactly.
So I think
we're rapidly... It's a very interesting conversation, Alex, because I think we are genuinely, maybe you agree with this, Tiffany, as well, reaching an age where a television schedule is pretty much meaningless. In that you can watch again, you can buy them on DVD, you can watch repeats,
it's just over there.
You can record them on Sky or whatever. I mean, what's the point of a schedule?
And proof that we're actually in the digital age, I finally scrolled back to 2012, Tiffany, and found actually in the studio with Professor Norman Cherry and indeed Katie Grimmison, Birmingham Lass.
Strange,
exactly. And you're wearing a very fetching set of red trousers there. Hang on.
Oh, okay.
With the classic you,
me,
heart me, we. Exactly.
On your
standard.
That's it.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't have said it any better myself. You know, Tiffany, just awesome. Tiffany Freeman, have you enjoyed being on the Midweek Drive for this particular adventure in audio broadcasting? Has it been good for you?
Yes, it's been great. Thank you very much.
This is what we like to hear. I think Penny Evans actually has also sent in another message, but where that's actually gone into the whole system, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you just get so confused with this whole technology side of things that you think, what's going on with this whole thing? Anyway, now that you officially have your items, you've got your jingles and various other bits and pieces, oh, yes, Penny Evans, not bothered if Doctor Who is a man or woman, just so long as the stories remain good and strong. Should we like that? Should we like that?
Yes, we
like that.
I've liked that from that sort of point of view. So great stuff there. Marvellous. For a moment there, I think Penny Evans actually thought you were Gabriella Peralta. No, Penny, Gabriella's on the morning. Okay, this is Tiffany Case. Easily confused.
No worries.
Exactly.
No worries.
So I take it then you'll be back with us again in the very near future?
Yes, in the very near future, definitely.
Marvellous.
Thank
this is,
you.
This is good. Well, we're going to be saying farewell in a few moments before we head out with Zayn Malik. I know, most peculiar. On a programme which has taken us from Anna Lewis, William Coles, Nick Smith at the Harrogate's Autumn Flower Show. Yeah, you could have seen the Stone Tapes had they not got friends coming along for this. I had a couple of tickets all lined
really
up.
You really wanted to go. Told me today.
I mean, in terms of horror, what more could you actually ask for than some man-eating plants and carnivorous plants,
fantastic.
You know, working through their own process? I mean, it's just awesome. And giant vegetables, an onion that's over 18 pounds in size. You know,
18 pounds.
Talking significant,
oh,
we're talking life forms there. Exactly.
That's
amazing.
I did there.
I did indeed. I just didn't sort of overkill the line. Thanks to Professor Robin Murphy from Oxford and Dan Matheson from Barclaycard for their goosebump moment. Phil Hurdwood, of course, and Arthur Weingarten, and yourself, dear listener, and Tiffany Freeman, and well, the whole sort of system, etc. Tiffany, what should we actually say for the final farewell? Should we just say farewell? Should we say be seeing you? I mean, you choose. Should we choose live long and prosper? What do you think we should actually say as the final call or farewell?
Live long and prosper. Yeah,
nice.
Definitely.
Good choice.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
And a nice shameless plug here. I'll be delivering a session on James Cook, 250 years, of course, since HMS Endeavour effectively set sail. versus James Kirk, yet to set sail. So we did a Kirk versus Cook comparison.
Very clever, Alex. That's very clever. We can rely on you.
I like to feel there's some sort of connection from that point of view. So there we are. So we've got the lines from that point of view. Live long and prosper. So after three, a one, a two, a three.
Live long and prosper.
Didn't quite get it in terms of synchronicity there.
Should we try it one more time?
Yeah, okay,
one more time.
I know Fenella Fielding's passed on.
We already shared that.
Exactly. It's okay.
She was lovely.
And she's probably looking down there thinking, yes, why didn't they employ me more? But that's a different line.
Okay, here we go.
And Jacqueline Pearson. Oh, the way it's good. Okay, a one, a two, a three.
Live long and prosper.
Vanilla ice cream.